Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, my friend, how are we doing this week?
Good. Right back at you, Jim. How are you doing this week?
Oh, not too bad. You and I both have relatives down south in Florida, you know, dealing with the ravages of the storm. We wish all of our listeners down there safety. Hope everything, you came through it okay. Most importantly, that you came through it safely. That's more important than anything else, Andy.
Yeah, it's a lot to deal with down there. It was that storm was no joke, and we've got some close family, and we've got some investment down there. You know, not money wise, but people wise, we've got part of our hearts are down there as well, right? Both you and I.
Exactly, Andy. You know, you and I have both been down there, right in the middle of where it is, that whole Tampa, Sarasota area. And, there was no way around it. In fact, for sports fans, I think we can see the ravages of it looking at the Tampa Bay Rays baseball stadium. The roof was torn off.
Yeah, one of many roofs that I think you're going to find that were torn off. St. Pete got a double whammy of the wind. They got the front end and the back end, and it's just after what they went through 2 weeks ago with Helene in St. Pete Clearwater area, and then this, devastation is the only word. It's my brother who lives down there just said the only thing word he can really think of right now is devastation. It's unbelievable to the eye, and he's lived there for nearly a quarter century.
It's really craziness. And again, we just wish all our listeners from down there the very best. All right, Andy. It's always a tough segue when you go from something like that to the sports world, but let's do it. Let's start with this. A week ago, Andy, absolute carnage in the top 10 of college football. Just to quickly list it. Number one, Alabama. Coming off that huge win against Georgia, they go down to unranked Vanderbilt. Perhaps the greatest statistic I've seen is Vanderbilt going into this game was 0-60 against top five teams. They knock off number one. That's got to be the biggest surprise of all there, Andy.
It was shocking. And what was stunning was, yeah, okay, Vanderbilt sort of, when you first saw the score, like I first saw the score and I was like, what? Vanderbilt's beating Alabama right now. That was the word you said, like, oh, well, they're beating them right now. And it was like in the second quarter or something. Vanderbilt never slowed up. They kept pace with Alabama all the way through to the end. That's earned. Everyone's talking about Alabama, sort of how they messed up. They lost. They gave the game away. I'm sorry. When you score 40 points, you've earned that win. I think Vanderbilt went out and won that football game against Alabama. That's the biggest Richter scale of the earthquakes, but the aftershocks through college football, what we're about to talk about, it's pretty seismic. It's the first one in the college football playoff area. But keep going, Jimmy. Alabama starts it off.
And then Tennessee, number four, gets knocked off by unranked Arkansas. And Andy, Tennessee, before the season started, we knew who the very, very top Southeast Conference teams were. Texas, Georgia, Alabama. Yep. Then it was of that second tier, I always felt somebody would rise from that group and put themselves in that upper echelon. After whatever number of weeks, I thought it was going to be Tennessee. I think everybody did, hence their number four ranking. Lo and behold, they go down to an unranked Arkansas team, Andy.
Yeah, it was Keep going, Jimmy. You're only just getting started, sir. And it's SEC hit, SEC hit, by the way.
Let's keep the SEC theme going. Missouri, undefeated, ranked number 9. We know they were a top 10 team last year. Fraud. They were a fraud, Andy. Number 25, Texas A&M, didn't just win. They crushed Missouri 41-10.
Yeah. So at the same time, that was a woodshed game, right? Like they took Texas A&M took Missouri out behind the woodshed and sort of, you know, beat them around. At the same time that Texas A&M sort of opened the floodgates on Missouri, at the same time, Texas A&M jumped right back into the fray, sort of, you know, in a big time way. I think you have to look at Texas A&M realistically. So that was a twofer game. That was like a double down game, in my opinion, because it was like, they kind of exposed Missouri for maybe what you thought they were. But at the same time, you've got another SEC team climbing back into that sort of, hey, what about us window?
They did reestablish themselves. And Andy, what it also does in talking about A&M, we always overreact to single games.
Correct.
Early on, Notre Dame beat A&M. We said, here's what it said positive about Notre Dame. Here was the negative. We just dismissed Texas A&M the same way we dismissed Clemson at that time.
Losing to Georgia the way they did, yeah.
Exactly. Well, guess what? It's a pretty long season, and redemption is possible. All right, now let's go to the Big Ten portion of our carnage, Andy. Number 10, Michigan, who I think a lot of people were not sold on this. This is a completely new team than a year ago. They were still ranked number 10, probably overranked. But they lost to Washington 27-17 when Washington outscored them 13-0 in the fourth quarter for the comeback win there, Andy.
The way Michigan had sort of held its serve, right, through the course of the year, they lost to Texas, right? But the way they were kind of holding their head just sort of like in the picture was they were winning fourth quarters, right? Like winning fourth quarters decisively. And they put themselves in that scenario. It's a big ask to win games like that, Jimmy. You know, you just sort of hang in there and then you win in the fourth quarter. That's really hard to do on a consistent basis. And they couldn't do it on the road at Washington. You know, that it wasn't, to me, it wasn't necessarily a surprise. It was right where you think would Michigan would want the game, right? After 45 minutes heading into the final 15. And it's just too big of an ask to do it that many times in that short of a 6 or 7 week window.
And Michigan doesn't have a quarterback. So that will come back to haunt you.
Right.
And then the final piece of the carnage, number 11, USC loses to Minnesota. Minnesota outscores them 14-0 in the fourth quarter to win at 24-17, Andy.
Yeah. USC's got some issues. We're going to talk about them because, lo and behold, Penn State's going out to the West Coast, pay a visit to Los Angeles to play those Trojans. Minnesota doubled down on what you learned about USC in the Michigan game, and they just upped the ante. At the same time, they upped the ante for Penn State this week by beating USC and sending them into this matchup with a loss.
Yeah, and now USC is now unranked USC. And it's funny, I've heard people lament this as, you know what, USC just couldn't hold on. If they would have just held on, it would have been a top 10 USC team and a top 10 matchup with Penn State, Andy.
Yeah, I'm not sure USC would have creeped into the top 10 barely holding on against Minnesota, maybe. But well, it would have been more of a marquee matchup. Absolutely.
With all the other carnage, Andy, they may have snuck up to 10, maybe 9, but with all the other carnage, like Missouri dropping out, I think USC would have jumped up to at least number 10, right?
You're right. They'd have been in the neighborhood, and it would have been a different type of marquee matchup. It's still a huge matchup as far as Penn State is concerned.
Yes. And the fact it does not bother me at all, because what I'm not sure, you know, if USC were ranked 10th and Penn State goes in and beats them, USC would have dropped in the rankings, of course, eventually. And I think there may be, you know, another couple losses on USC's schedule. So at the end of the year, I'm still not sure this would be a marquee win for Penn State. And this kind of leading up to some of the conclusions to come out of all this, Andy, and we'll get more into it in quarter number two.
Yep.
But my first takeaway is that just win and survive. You know, that's what Penn State needs to do and what everybody else needs to do.
Yeah, sort of. So the SEC is the one that it kind of took a hit, but it's also at the same time, you know, showing exactly what it was. I think we had talked about it, ad nauseum a little bit, Jimmy, as the season's unfolded so far. The depth of the SEC was alarming to me. Like, not 1 through 3, but I'm talking, you know, go down 6, 7, 8, look at it. It's even go down further. I'm still hanging my hat on Kentucky. Gosh, you don't want to play that team. But right now, when you look at the SEC, they have one unbeaten team, Texas, right? They have 8 1-loss teams, Jimmy, 8. In this new college football playoff era of the 12 teams, the SEC now has 1 unbeaten and 8 1-loss teams, including both Alabama and Georgia are part of the 1-loss team group, which is a different position for them and the SEC. So they're going to play each other. There's going to be some 2-loss SEC teams. There might even be a hammer that could be a 3-loss SEC team when you're looking at it at the end of the day. I don't, you know, outside of Texas, and it's only because Texas is unbeaten. They still got some meat on their bone, and they're playing really good football. But that is a minefield to navigate in the SEC, and I think that's going to – it's going to adds more credence to the regular season still really matters, and it's going to make – the College Football Playoff Committee's decision even more difficult. They're going to have to do some serious work this year, and it's because the SEC is as deep as it is.
That is part of it, Andy, and there's depth there, or maybe it's not quite as good as we thought it was when you have teams like Arkansas and Vanderbilt winning games against your premier teams. We're going to talk about that, Andy, when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. It is quarter number two. We are talking about, we're talking about all of college football, Andy. We started out our first quarter talking about games from last week. I want to talk about the repercussions of those games. Before we get into that, Andy, want to mention coming up Whiteout Game Weekend. There's a Whiteout Party being sponsored by Happy Valley United. They are the Penn State Collective. This Whiteout Party will be Friday night, November 8th. That is the weekend of the Whiteout game with Washington. This event is going to be held at the Nittany Lion Inn. Great event. There'll be football lettermen there. There'll be an 80s cover band. Velveeta will be there. The event will take place Friday, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. If you're looking for something to do when you get in town for the game, this is a great, great way to go. There's music, dancing, food, an open bar. They're also going to have a raffle and auction. And if you are interested, just head over to happyvalleyunited.com. There's an events tab. Click the events tab. You'll see it there. You'll get all the information, all the ticketing information, everything you need to do for that party. All right, Andy, let's talk about the repercussions of this. And I want to start with this, Andy. All right. First of all, a sound for you. You hear that?
Yeah, that's a piece of paper you had?
Yes. You know what piece was on that piece of paper?
Your 12 teams for the college football playoff?
No. I've brought this up time and time again. Prior to the season, I played out the Southeast Conference schedule, okay? And the way I did it was, I said, by chalk. In other words, whoever was ranked higher would win because you had to pick a winner somehow, some way. That was the easy way to do it. And at the end, when I finished this, I came up with seven teams with two losses or fewer, including five teams, Andy, that were either undefeated or had one loss, okay? Among those teams with one loss, I didn't have Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, Andy. Right. Tennessee, I have with two losses. I did not have them losing to Arkansas. I didn't have Ole Miss, who they lose to, Kentucky. Yeah. I did not have that, Andy. That is why I crumpled up that piece of paper with that information on it. It is of no use anymore. So where I'm headed with all of this, Andy, is the Southeast Conference, which you have reminded me week after week, is the ultimate strongest conference. Well, those top teams were losing to teams like Vanderbilt and Arkansas. How do we now look at the Southeast Conference differently?
Yeah, so you look at the Southeast Conference, is it weaker or is it stronger? I'm leaning towards it might be a little stronger, and I'm looking at it differently, right? Like, so I look at the Big Ten and I see you've got your three teams. By the way, this SEC carnage is helping the Big Ten, and your Penn State Nittany Lions are a great benefactor of this, right? All these one-loss teams, Penn State, Ohio State, and Oregon, no losses, no losses, no losses, right? They've still got a great opportunity for the Big Ten. The way I'm looking at it is I'm looking at beyond the two power conferences, beyond the Big Ten. I'm looking at second teams. I'm looking at undefeateds, the ACC, the Big 12, right? Are they viable for second teams in the college football playoff scenario? Are you going to take a two loss, say Georgia or Alabama, for example, or maybe a two-loss LSU, or I'll just throw one out there, over a one-loss Pitt, right? Say Pitt ends up, they're undefeated right now, by the way, not to jab into the Penn State Pitt thing. I'm not doing that. I'm just picking a random school. How is the College Football Playoff Committee going to decide that? Remember before, when it was a 14 playoff, it was strictly a numbers game, right? Strictly. Loss, there was a line in the sand. And I said at the beginning, the College Football Playoff Committee, I've always said when they've gone to 12, has more work to do. And I think we are starting to see that play out. And it's not comparing apples to apples. Are they going to compare apples to oranges? And how are they going to lean? And what's this decision going to look like? So as we move forward, and you recognize that, look, it's pretty clear the SEC and the Big Ten are better and deeper than any other conference in the country, right? End of story. Stop right there. The other two, are they worthy of a second team, or are you going to dig into deeper into the Big Ten or even deeper into the SEC to fill out your college football playoff bracket? Because we know what gets in. It's beyond that is what I'm looking at to make the strongest possible field to actually crown a 12-team playoff champion. So it'll be interesting as this moves along and they start to figure that out, because I have no idea what they're going to do. And I really don't know what it looks like. Is undefeated Pitt worthy over a two-loss Alabama, for example? I can't say for sure. Kind of think what I might think, but Is that what the College Football Playoff Committee is going to think, Jimmy? I have no idea what they're going to do.
Well, I've kind of changed my thinking in all of this, Andy, where I was the one with the 14 playoff, there was no work at all. You lose two games, you're out. You're undefeated, you're in. I know, Florida State. Forget that. That's the exception that makes the rule. And then you judge the one-loss teams. If you're one-loss team out of the Southeast Conference, you win the tiebreaker. That's it. That's how it went.
Right.
And then I've always been saying they're going to have to do more work because I thought there was going to be so many teams within the Southeast Conference that would only have two losses. Well, now with some of these upsets, I think that may reset things, the paradigm here a bit, where there may not be all that many Southeast Conference teams with two losses, that's the tiebreaker. But in the ACC, might it be a case where I think a two-loss Southeast Conference team you take in over a two-loss ACC team. But I don't think you'll take a three-loss Southeast Conference team over say, now a two-loss Clemson. And I think that might be the change. But it also, Andy, I hope the committee takes a look at schedules because I can't help myself, Andy. I listed many of the Southeast Conference contenders. I didn't put in Texas as still undefeated.
Correct.
But there's still such a disparity in schedules going forward. Alabama has one loss. Missouri has one loss. But here's the difference. Alabama has four what I'll call premier games left. Tennessee, Missouri itself, LSU, and Oklahoma. Missouri only has two. Alabama and Oklahoma. And I think there are a lot of people wondering just how good this Oklahoma team is. So I'm wondering how much that disparity in schedule is going to define things. If Alabama and Missouri both end up with two losses, to me it's an easy pick. You take Alabama. And I'm just using those two teams as an example. But if you go all the way through the Southeast Conference contenders, you have this kind of disparity in the scheduling, Andy.
Yeah, you do. And you're going to have it outside of the SEC as well. So the SEC is now, once again, they have a bit of a problem in their depth, and they are now creating a bigger problem in a 12-team college football playoff era, right? Miami's unbeaten in the ACC. Colorado's got one loss. You know, you got one loss Clemson. You got undefeated Pitt. Are you looking at strictly the numbers and the records, or are you going to dig deeper? I think you're going to have to dig deeper when you're looking at these, at who's going to fill out your college football playoff. Do you take a two-loss Pitt over a three-loss Alabama? Right? Those are the kind of apples and oranges you're going to be looking at. Do you take a one-loss Clemson over a two-loss LSU? Apples and oranges, right? Like it's going to be very difficult for this committee to finish out the field because I don't think it's going to be so black and white and level as we are used to it, like you laid out just a minute ago. It was pretty black and white and very easy to figure out. This is going to be very difficult. And they're going to set a precedence. As college football is moving towards two power conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten, that's very clear that they're moving that direction. Is the College Football Playoff Committee going to be on the same wavelength, or are they going to, you know, judge all four of the conferences, you know, in four of those conferences equally? I don't know, Jimmy. I really don't know. So I think this is a very arduous task for this committee because they're going to set precedents. And now all based on last weekend, now it's chaos. Right? It's chaos. And this is where the argument where the regular season doesn't matter goes out the window. How important are these last six games for each of these teams heading towards the college football playoff 12 team? Massive, right? And I'm sorry, lost in the shuffle of all this as you're looking at the other two, how deep do you go in the Big Ten? How deep are you going to go in the Big Ten? Are you going to take the third Big Ten team? over the fifth SEC team? I would. That's another question to be asked, right? Like, I just feel that there's so much unknown, and now it's become even more, the water's become even a little more muddied. I just think they're going to have to really, really do their due diligence as they build out this bracket.
They are going to have to do more work. And I think, Andy, this past weekend showed us there are going to be these kind of upsets that help us out in clarifying. Plus, there's going to be, you mentioned Pitt. We both mentioned Clemson. Pitt plays Clemson. And the other point to remember, Andy, are these conference championship games.
Yep.
So if Clemson, for Clemson to remain one loss Clemson, that means they win the ACC championship.
They're in.
Obviously. But if Miami wins it, that means Clemson has another loss and it becomes a two-loss Clemson. And I don't think they don't win a two-loss tiebreaker with a Southeast Conference school.
I don't know. I do. That's
I do.
$64,000 question.
They had a chance against the Southeast Conference team in Georgia, and they got their butt kicked, Andy.
They got gobsmacked. They got gobsmacked all the way around the block.
That kind of game is going to factor in. All right, Andy, that is it for quarter number two. When we come back, your questions and Ask Andy. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Andy, I'm Jim. Quarter number three means it's time to ask Andy. We take your questions. If you want to send in a question, download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Andy button. Very easy, and off you go. Andy, I'm going to change the name of our segment just for today, okay? It won't be Ask Andy so much as it's going to be Tim from Port Matilda asks Andy.
Oh, no. Here we go. How long? How long is it?
Well, I think Tim kind of got around our issue with his long question by sending in three questions, okay? And for the second question, he says, Jim, there's no rule as far as I know against two questions. You're right, Tim.
No rule.
And I'm going to humor you, Tim, okay? We'll get through everything you sent. In fact, we're going to start with it.
All right.
Here's Tim from Port Matilda. He starts with, I hate to have to ask this question, Andy. No, you don't, Tim. Tim, you love to ask these questions. Never say you hate them. Anyway, he says, Andy, is James Franklin starting to meddle too much in the offense? It's very weird, but we've seen a slight regression. And in the UCLA game, they were forcing the run a bit, and it didn't work out. I'm very nervous heading into USC game. Maybe Andy Kotelnicki completely has the reins, but it seemed like they are trying to force the run to work at the detriment of Drew Aller having a hot hand. I'm starting to wonder. Let's take his questions one at a time. That's number one, Andy. Go ahead.
No, I don't think James is meddling. I really don't. I think when you're missing one of your biggest assets, which Nick Singleton is one of the biggest focal points of not only what he can do, but what they want to establish and who they are as an offense. When you're missing that, then you're kind of putting a little lipstick on a pig, right? And I think if they – I liked what Drew Aller did on that drive right before the end of the first half. Of course you did. It was darn near, you know, perfection from a quarterback in marching his team down the field. I still believe Andy Kotelnicki's got the keys because that is not the way they are going to be successful at the next level as an offense is with Drew Aller holding the key, you know, sort of that being the focus of the offense. If he's throwing 47, 52 times a game, and that's going to be the focus of your offense, I don't see them having as much success. I think the offense has been functionally very, very entertaining and fun to watch. It has a clear plan, purpose, and what they want to do and who sort of the focus of their offense is. If you're talking about Drew Aller having taken over as sort of the focus of the offense and you're talking about the wide receivers, I'm sorry, I've watched Andy Kotelnicki spend this entire season so far at watching him sort of try and cover up and hide a little bit, not overtly, but just try and say, this is our weakest link. How do we cover it up? If Drew Aller's thrown 47, 50 times a game, guess what? You can't hide and cover up anymore. So I don't see a problem with it. And I think Drew himself is comfortable and confident with what they, the plan and purpose of this offense. That is more clear to me than anything else, that he's buying it. He likes it. He's comfortable in it. Most importantly, he's confident in it. Keep going in that direction. And I don't feel James is meddling. I do not.
I don't think so either, Andy. And I think this concept of running too much, and I saw that too in the UCLA game, so I know exactly what he's talking about. But that game was always under control. To be fair, Drew Aller missed a couple passes early, or he didn't connect with his receivers. But that last drive showed me that if you do have to put it in Drew Aller's hands, he could handle it. Absolutely. Against USC, based on what we've seen from USC, we're going to see a run-heavy game again. But I still feel confident if Drew Aller has to pass the ball, he will. All right, let's get to the rest, or the next question from Tim from Port Matilda. All right, I know I've already asked a question, but there's no rules against getting in two, Jim, right? Anyway. Nope. Which team has more pressure, Penn State or USC? Both under immense pressure. However, USC has its season on the line. If USC loses this game, they're out of the playoffs. That would also mean that Lincoln Riley is 5-8 in his last 13 games. Penn State better expect everything to be thrown at them. Now, here's the next question I'll throw out there. It's more a comment. Typical follow-up from me. Just for closure's sake, when I say 9-3 isn't good enough to get into the playoffs, I'm obviously talking about USC running the table. This could have been a top 10 matchup had USC done what they needed to do. Instead, they're unranked. Let's start with who's more got more pressure, Penn State or USC?
It's clearly USC, 100%. They're not. They haven't. They not only do they have two losses, they have not had sort of control of football games the way Penn State has. Penn State's been control. The scores have been a little closer, Illinois, UCLA, but there was never any doubt who was in control of those football games. Penn State has had the luxury of controlling football games no matter what the scoreboard says. That's a big deal for me. The pressure's on USC because the carnage that sort of went on last weekend has sort of It has helped Penn State's sort of window of opportunity expand a little bit. So I just feel that the pressure is squarely on USC this week because it's for two reasons. The wins and losses, they obviously matter a lot. And here comes another team that your clear weakness has been identified. Teams that run can run on you. Hello, look who's coming now. The best of them.
Andy, USC, I understand why people would think that. And if USC could get past Penn State, the rest of their schedule is really manageable. There's no Oregon. There's no Ohio State. They already played Michigan. They'll now have already played Penn State. But the thing is, with already two losses at this point in the season, and as many games as they lost last year, I don't want to say USC has already packed it in. They haven't.
No.
But there may be also an awareness from USC that, hey, we're not the team we thought we were going to be. So I'm not sure if they're going to feel the pressure or just understand the inevitability. All right, let's move on. Let's get to Mike and Carlisle. Thus ends our Tim and Port Matilda portion of our show. Next up is Mike and Carlisle. He says, Pitt's redshirt freshman quarterback Eli Holstein appears to be the real deal. With him being from Southeast Conference country, what do you think the probability is for him to hit the transfer portal, take a nice NIL offer from a Southeast Conference school or a more prestigious football program? With Narduzzi's past comments and feelings on the transfer portal, could you imagine if this would happen? Narduzzi's head would explode.
Yeah, he's not a fan of the transfer portal, but I find it interesting that he's not a fan of it only one way, right? Like, he's not a, he doesn't seem like he's a fan of it both ways, right? Like, I don't think he's necessarily a fan of the coming and going because he hates the going part so much. And I'm sorry, you have to embrace that. They're 5-0, right? So I think his head would explode, and I agree.
Well, here's the thing to remember, and I'm not sure Mike is aware of this. Now, he says the kid is from Southeast Conference territory. He's from Louisiana.
Right.
So would he be drawn to go home? Here's the thing to remember. He started out, Andy, at Alabama.
He did.
So he himself is a transfer portal kind of guy. Now, with NIL as a factor, yes, it's always a possibility for anybody to transfer. Go for the money, and I can't blame anyone for doing that. But outside of the money, he's got to look at it like, you know what? I was at Alabama. Things didn't work out there. Here I am at Pitt, and everything is going great. If his goal, as it should be, is to get to the NFL, it appears right now Pitt provides a nice path for him to get to the NFL, Andy. And so I don't think he'll be going anywhere. All right, let's go to Daniel in Belle Vernon, who says, Coach James Franklin made an interesting comment in his UCLA postgame session with the media about our defense's awesome stats so far this season, that in the five games played against opponents in the third quarter has allowed only 87 yards, 46 plays, and 1.9 yards average per play. I would like your thoughts on a suggestion I have for Coach James Franklin. I think he should petition the NCAA and Big Ten to let us start every game in the third quarter and then play the first and second quarters, or even better, allow us to dominate every game remaining if they let us play a 60-minute third quarter. Yeah. Daniel's being a little sarcastic there, Andy.
I think so, too. I look at the defense. They were fantastic in the first half against West Virginia, right? Bowling Green. That's the game everyone's looking at. Like, what happened against Bowling Green? Hello, this kid was throwing dimes. That's the exception to the norm. Illinois, first drive, nothing, right? UCLA, 3 points until the 59th minute of the game. That's it. That's all they got. They have made a lot of good adjustments in second half. Oh, by the way, the Bowling Green game. Remember what happened in second half? 74 yards and 3 points, right? Like, next to nothing. So I think this defense has been championship caliber outside of a half when a guy was just lighting them up. And are they going to face an offense this week that's going to tell you that you should expect anything different? I'm not sure I see it.
You know, Andy, I'll differ a little bit from you. I do think Illinois had the first drive. They also had another drive in the first half where they were on the 2-yard line and outside the fumble. They probably would have scored. I believe West Virginia actually had some decent drives in the first half.
They did.
But you also combine that with a slow start from the offense, where, as I pointed out, in this game against UCLA, Penn State was 0-for-2 on their first third down opportunities, which means they are giving the ball over to the opponent. So I think there still is an issue in how they start a game. I'll be curious to see how they do against USC, Andy. I don't want to see this kind of slow start on the road that against perhaps a better team. All right, that's it for quarter number 3. Stick around. We're going to look ahead to Penn State USC in the fourth quarter.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We've been talking a lot college football. We did Ask Andy in quarter number three. Before we look ahead in this segment, Andy, just a reminder, Happy Valley United, that's the Penn State Collective. They're sponsoring a whiteout party Friday night, November 8th. That's the weekend of the whiteout game at the Nittany Lion Inn from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. A lot of football lettermen will be there, live music, dancing, food, open bar, a lot of great stuff going on there. So if you're coming into town or if you're in State College, what a great way to start off your whiteout weekend. If you want more information on how to get tickets, go to happyvalleyunited.com. There's an events tab. Click on that, and away you go. All right, Andy, it's time to look ahead. We've got Penn State USC coming up, and there's been a narrative going on this week, Andy. Teams in the Big Ten that have to travel two time zones do not fare very well.
They do not.
They are 1-8, and we've seen this with USC going to Minnesota. We saw it with Michigan going out to Washington. And, you know, actually we have two of those kind of games, big games. Penn State traveling to USC, Ohio State traveling to Oregon. Let's stick with Penn State, USC. How big a factor is that travel, Andy?
The numbers tell you it is a factor. James is a devil in the detail guy, so he's got maybe a different plan and thought worked out. It's a factor. Is it a big factor? I don't know. I just see some advantages on the Penn State side that can maybe eliminate that. But your question to me was, is it a factor? Well, these teams are 1-8 when that's happened, no matter whether you've gone west to east or east to west, doesn't matter. Two time zones, 1-8. Is that a factor after 6 weeks? Yeah, it's a factor. Absolutely, Jimmy.
It is, Andy. But what I wonder now, with James Franklin is anal about these kind of things, okay, processes.
Yep.
And again, I'll bring up the storm, the lightning at Michigan State, and they ended up losing the game. So you knew James Franklin would have a plan in case that ever happens again. He's now got a plan for this travel. But what I fear sometimes is because James makes a big deal of it, then the team will make a big deal of it. Instead of saying, hey, this is just part of the business. You travel, you do it. Just go out there, be prepared and ready to play. And I sometimes wish James Franklin would concern himself more with what's going on the field rather than the length of the runway.
Well, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I'm glad he doesn't sort of hide from it and disregard it. I'm glad he actually embraces it and talks about it because it's a factor. So we look at that. I understand what you're saying, but I look at it differently. I'm like, yeah, don't hide from the elephant in the room. Hey, teams going over two time zones, they've struggled. Yep.
All right. Well, let's look at the game itself and the teams themselves. Andy, it seems like both Minnesota and Michigan provided a bit of a template for how to beat USC. You play Big Ten football, you run right at them, you out-physical them, and that's how you beat USC.
Yeah, you beat USC in the trenches, right? Like, so I'm looking at it both ways. You're 100% right. I watched the Michigan and Minnesota games, and the USC defense against the run, they still have holes and gaps, and they're big, right? Those two clubs exploited that massively in those wins. And I think Penn State even has a bigger, better, and stronger element to their run game that they're bringing to the table for USC to deal with. On the one side, and then you look at the flip side for me, USC's offensive line, they've struggled in pass protection big time in recent weeks. Their quarterback, Miller Moss, he's been under serious duress. I think this has hampered their offense greatly. It's sort of put Lincoln Riley in a pinch in that play calling rhythm that he likes to get in. And while I look at that on the USC side, I flip over and go, I think of Abdul Carter, Deni Dennis Sutton on the outside, and Zay Durant up the middle. Boy, do they have an opportunity in this game to keep Moss on that struggle bus in terms of protection and keep that offensive line struggling. To me, this game is a lot about the trenches. If that is the way it has gone for both clubs through the first part of this season, I have a hard time seeing Penn State not winning this football game. If it's different, that's where it could be a problem for Penn State, because they, I think it, when it comes to the just the pure trenches, D-line versus O-line, both ways, I think Penn State has some serious advantage on both sides of the ball.
And Andy, I think we need to point out here on the offensive side of the ball, all appearances, Nick Singleton missed the game against UCLA.
Yep.
He was in uniform. James Franklin seemed to say if they really needed him, he probably could have played. So it appears he's ready to go. He was seen that practice, just normally practicing, so he should be ready. The other thing is Anthony Donka, starting right tackle, based on what James Franklin said at his press conference, I believe it was on Wednesday, it appears Anthony Donka will also be ready to play. So those two pieces of information fit right into this conversation, Andy.
Yeah, and I think when, you know, you're focusing on the running backs, right, when we've watched Penn State play this year and the running game and how this offense is built, what its sort of foundation is, and its plan and purpose is. Look at their offensive line, Jimmy. They have not been, you know, holistically healthy. They've had some injuries to deal with. They've had some guys go out in games. They've had to sort of, you know, piecemeal some stuff together on the fly. How good has this group been in 2024? It's been a very quiet sort of like, well, they just kind of keep being good no matter who's in there. That can't be understated, Jimmy. No matter who they've put in and where they've plug and play guys and move stuff around. Rucci, Nelson, Cooper Cousins, right? Those three guys. Williams, right? Out on the tackle spot. You know, Iwane, you know, forget the motion stuff, but he's been playing more. They've showed that, we talked about it for the season, that they not only, they're a little short on quote-unquote experience, but they have serious depth. And look at what that serious depth and how it's shown up already to this point in the season. That's going to matter against USC a lot.
It will, Andy. And let's look at the other side of the ball with Penn State's defense. You pointed out USC has been vulnerable to the rush. This could be a game where Penn State's defensive line gets fat.
They could. They've been getting a little fatter and fatter with each passing week, to steal your word. This is an opportunity on a big stage for them to actually be a difference maker, right? Like a complete and total difference maker in terms of the outcome of the game. And I think you're going to see that play out in my bold prediction, by the way, Jimmy. Hello, foreshadowing. Foreshadowing. Uh-oh. Yeah, I think this defensive line, with what I've seen and where they're trending, particularly with their defensive tackles have been fantastic, but Zane Durant has clearly gone to a completely to another level as an overall player, that run or pass, he is an impact player up the middle, and they've got three other guys backing him up, and they've been solid. This defensive line has an opportunity to be a difference maker in this game. USC can run the ball a little bit. They might try. That's, again, another factor with this defensive line. Can they be that good? I think they can be the ones that at the end of the day, you're like, man, was that defensive line a big factor in what Penn State did if they win the game?
You know, Andy, I'm seeing a lot of prognosticators taking USC, and I think that's an overreaction to this 1-8 statistic we use.
Correct.
In talking about teams traveling multiple time zones. That's but that's what prognosticators do. I'm not going that way because I use, at the end of the day, who's the better team? And I don't think it's by a little bit. I think it's a significant amount that this Penn State team is better than USC. And I think USC, having shown themselves so vulnerable to that a physical team, a team that's willing to run the ball, and Penn State with those two guys, those two hammers, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, I think that gives Penn State the distinct advantage. But, sir, I am allowing you to give us your prediction and your famous bold prediction.
So I found something interesting. Did you know that, Jimmy, that Penn State has won 25 state straight games against teams that were not ranked in the AP top 25 the week they played them? Interesting.
Yes.
So another thing that strikes me as USC's defense as a whole has combined for 6 sacks this season. Hello, pocket impact. Opportunity in the run game, but that also gives Drew Aller time. So I'm going to go Penn State 27, USC 17. It just feels like Penn State's a better team. Second half, going into the fourth quarter, building as the game goes along. Those are all things. My bold prediction, Penn State's defense, they're going to have comes up with 3 interceptions in this one, Jimmy. Pressure sets the table for the picks. Pressure, pressure, pressure sets the table. Penn State's back end has been very close to picking off more passes than they have already this season by the numbers. They've been close. I think they're going to get 3 interceptions, and I think my bold thing is it's set up by the pressure.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andy. You had a score of 27-17. If they get 3 interceptions, I think they'll win by more than 10 points. I'm not sure they'll get that many turnovers. If they do, it's a very good sign for them. I have it going 31-20, so you and I are pretty close on our predictions. I think it comes down to, I keep saying this when I make a prediction, give me the better team, all right?
Right.
I'm saying the same thing about Ohio State with Oregon. Yes, Ohio State going through that travel also and playing a much better team in Oregon than USC, but I believe Ohio State to be the much better team. But give me the Nittany Lions, Andy.
We both got them, Jimmy.
I
got them this week. And it was a 50-50 for me game until they lost to Minnesota. And it was the way USC lost to Minnesota that grabbed me.
Very good. That's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.